This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bruce. So the three of us are back from Manchester now, James and Katie. How did you think conference went? And having had both conferences, where do you think the two parties are respectively? Katie, do you want to go first?
I think the reaction, so the next day reaction to Boris Johnson's speech is interesting because a lot of people are again picking up on the fact that it was a positive, joke-filled speech. But I think now that you've moved past the immediate, you know, of people being very pumped up in the hall after, more criticism of the fact it was so policy light, of, you know, when you see energy prices rising as they currently are, did he go near these difficult problems? And is it going to be, as James touched on the podcast yesterday, a little tone deaf if we are heading to that territory? I think in terms of those two conferences, they haven't really moved the dial in the sense that you still have Boris Johnson as, you know, the one to be comfortably in front, in charge of his party, and Keir Starmer, who's struggling to cut through. But I do think when it came to Keir Starmer, he has still made some progress, just in the sense that he has managed to redo some of the party machinery. So it's harder to deselect an MP. And they feel that his team feels that they've marginalised the left further. And I think we could start to see that in terms of perhaps some boldness in what Keir Starmer does. Now, that may be just, you know, I may be projecting in that sense, but I do think that when you speak to those around Keir Starmer, they definitely feel as though they have had to watch what they say, and so have many MPs, because of the rules as they previously were. And so this just means that it's something you no longer have to worry about, and they can focus on talking to the country. Now, I think we saw from Boris Johnson's speech yesterday how it's very hard for Keir Starmer to find a space at, you know, to cut through and make that presentation. But we could start to see that as things get more tricky in terms of all these prices.
But James, there's an interesting second day poll out from the conference speech by Opinium, where people actually said that they found Keir Starmer marginally more appealing because of he seemed more competent from his speech. So do we put much stock by that sort of poll?
I'm dubious, because this kind of polling involves showing people clips from the speech. And shocking as it may be to us, there are people who haven't watched both speeches. But look, the great danger for Boris Johnson is events, right? It is when things are going well and the jokes, the optimism, they all fit with a public mood. And despite the problems out in the country, this was a Tory conference that was feeling good about the fact the country is out of lockdown, there are far fewer COVID restrictions than I think people would have imagined even a few weeks ago. You know, schools have gone back, you haven't seen a great spike in cases. The Tory party has an 80-seat majority. If these big increases in the wholesale energy market, as the boss of Ofgem indicated today, if those lead through into much higher household bills and the cost of living starts being squeezed, however good the jokes are, people will be grumpier with the government. It's harder to get a laugh at Build Back Beaver if people feel that they are worse off than they were a few months ago. And I think Keir Starmer, when the Labour Party have got into the lead in the opinion polls since Starmer became leader, it has been because the government has looked, you know, or closed the gap. It's because the government has looked incompetent or not in control. And I think that's got to be Starmer's great hope, because in terms of political space, Boris Johnson isn't leaving him very much. You know, he is, as we discussed in this podcast yesterday, he is just sprawled all over the centre ground. And it's quite hard for Starmer to find purchase. And the one kind of obvious place he's got left to go is, you know, responding to his labour shortage by, you know, allowing in more workers. That is difficult for Starmer, though, because whenever he does that, the Tories say, oh, look, he hasn't, you know, he just wants to bring back free movement. You know, it's obviously not right. But, you know, I think it's much better for Keir Starmer when it's leave supporting bosses like Simon Wolfson saying, actually, we do need more people to fill these gaps. And it's much more difficult for him, because it sounds like, you know, Boris Johnson wants to draw this dividing line where, you know, he wants higher pay for British workers, and all these people on the other side want to pull that lever of uncontrolled migration again and push down wages. Now, there are problems with that, because the UK clearly does need some more migration. I think those cabinet ministers who think it would be sensible to add more jobs to the shortage list, but with relatively high salary floors, so you allow firms to bring in workers from overseas, but only if they pay them a certain amount of money. You know, that would clearly be the sensible way to do this, to manage this transition a bit rather than trying to force it all through at once. But for Keir Starmer to take the lead on making that argument is leading with his chin, because the Tories are just desperate to say that Labour are drifting back towards free movement. But I think Katie is right in her analysis of Starmer's position, that he has got himself a bit more breathing room. But I think that the thing that is the biggest threat to the Tories right now is events, because I don't think Starmer has the ability to make the political weather. I think he might be able to capitalize on some rainy days for the government, but I don't think he can change the weather himself.
Mm. And Katie, is there a sort of underlying tension with business at the moment? You spoke on one of your panels with the new director of the CBI, Tony Danker, and today he says that he's being infuriated by the rhetoric coming from the government, suggesting as if businesses don't want to pay people more. So is that going to be another dynamic coming on down the line as well?
Yeah, I think it's no great secret that business groups are finding the government's line on much of this very difficult. And I think it goes back to Boris Johnson's old F business comment. Do you know what I mean? I think it just plays into this narrative, which is, I think, also reality, which is the government, or this Tory government, is much more relaxed than previous Tory governments about saying that, you know, they're not on the side of business on various occasions and instead talking about the people. And I think we're going to see that more when it comes to, you know, the pressure for wages to grow. And I think, again, it's one of these things where I think as time goes on, you're hearing, you know, lots of Tories too saying this, which is a concern that Boris Johnson's approach might be good spin on a crisis, but it's a crisis he doesn't really have that much control of. And I think that as we start to see what's really happening with things like inflation, the level of riches rising, you do wonder if there's going to end up being a more constructive conversation that will happen between politicians and business. Right now, it does feel very much like, you know, getting in your position and politicking to a degree rather than dealing with what we immediately know is here.
Mm. And James, finally, away from Westminster politics, Boris Johnson has also selected the next head of the British Armed Forces. So it won't be General Sir Nick Carter, because he's on his way out in any case. Someone called Tony Radakin. Can you tell us about him and why this appointment is significant?
So he's the first Sea Lord, he's the head of the Navy. He's the first head of the Navy to end up as Chief of the Defence Staff in quite some time. And I think this has been seen as, you know, a further sign of the UK's kind of maritime new desire to kind of reassert itself as a maritime power, which is obviously part of this broader Indo-Pacific tilt. We know that, you know, the UK has been doing lots of freedom of navigation operations in the Indo-Pacific, in the South China Sea specifically. And I think it is designed to kind of send a message about that, you know, this is that no longer the great theory is kind of the great worry is kind of Russian tanks rolling across the Rhine. It is a desire to be, you know, in the Indo-Pacific. And remember, he was involved in the I can never pronounce this correctly, the AUKUS deal on submarines with nuclear submarines with Australia. I think it represents a sign of the UK's desire to be involved there in that part of the world. Well, obviously, the Navy is going to be, you know, is going to be the most important element of the UK's military capabilities there. And so I think that is interesting. And I think that, you know, he becomes Chief of the Defence Staff at a time where we are, where the tensions in the are really quite serious. You know, we are looking at a situation where already in October 2021, we've had a record. We're less than a week into October 2021. I mean, it's already set a new monthly record for Chinese incursions into Taiwan's air defense zone. We've had reports today in the Wall Street Journal about the presence of US forces on Taiwan, training local forces so that they could better resist attempts at an invasion. I think we are heading into a very dangerous decade in that part of the world. And I think he's going to have a very important role in these military discussions about how best the UK responds to that. One thing I think to watch for over the coming months, I think a lot, is UK-Japan defence cooperation and what happens there. I think that is something where Whitehall has quite high hopes of, you know, a country with whom the UK could greatly intensify its relations. We know that the new Japanese Prime Minister is quite keen to do away with this idea that Japan should never spend more than 1% of GDP on defence. And I think that you could see quite a lot more UK-Japan cooperation in the coming months.
Fascinating. James and Katie, thanks very much. And do join us again tomorrow.